Welcome to the Avery Adventures podcast. Today we have Justin Crosley and Ryan.
Boy, that was a fucking overwhelming introduction. I can see why I do them all. As always, you can get 20% off using the code FATKID at MountainOps.com. They're a great product. And Justin, do you use the products?
I do. Yep.
What's your favorite product?
Ignite. That's just because I need energy drinks all the time.
Yeah, because you were...
Which flavor?
My favorite of the Ignite is the apple, the green apple.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. I think not very many people like that one.
I like
the best, but that's my favorite.
I like the grape Ignite, and they tell me that doesn't sell as well.
I don't like it at all.
Because it tastes like medicine.
Yeah.
I love the grape Ignite. But if I was to pick one thing that I think works the best for me is the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Because I'm fat and old and slow. And
I haven't tried anything of theirs that I didn't think worked well. So I like their stuff.
Right. I'm not a fan of the Magnum, but that's just me in protein.
Yeah. So.
But everything else, their Ignite, love it. I love the Black Cherry Enduro. So
yeah,
it's not the Mountain Ops commercial, but you can get 20% off using the code FATKID.
And you should.
So Justin, I met you in 2012 when we started Rockside. I didn't know you. You didn't know me.
Yep.
And over the past 5 years, we became quite good friends.
Yeah, I consider you guys family for sure. So
yeah, and the thing is it's funny because you know it's kind of like if you go back to early days and you look at like Match.com.
Yeah.
This internet dating, and I'm not saying that me and Justin are dating, but I'm just saying people always thought it was so weird that people met over the internet.
Yeah.
And now some of my closest friends, and I'd say Tanya's closest friends,
are for sure
from Rock Slide introduced acquaintances. So
yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm going to the movies with one of the people that we met tonight.
Yep.
His wife on Rock Slide, so that's fun. And they all. It's kind of crazy when you meet people online, but then yet find out they live so close to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found out a while back that Matt Whaley, the gunsmith that we like to use a lot, he actually served with my cousin.
No really? Way.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No.
Huh.
It was like, I had to text him. I'm like, what's going on here? And I go, you know Kelly? Yeah. I knew Kelly. Kelly passed away in the military, but it was just amazing to see that. So.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a small, if you in the hunting outdoor industry, it's a small, small place.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. People don't realize how that 6 degrees of separation really is true.
Right. So I guess I ought to backtrack and say, I'm not saying Rockslide is Match.com. All I'm saying is it's like Match.com for hunters. Because I know so many relationships that have been formed.
Hunting partners have been found.
Like this guy's name's Chris Cornelius. We went over and I met him actually hiking. He's like, oh, you're Ryan from Rockslide. I was like, yeah. And he's like, gonna come over and have some dinner and meet my wife. And we went over there and he's like, I'm going hunting with Randy, mountain, you know, Northwest Mountain Runner or whatever the hell his name is. I call him Ginger Beard too.
Right.
But he actually looks, Randy looks like Yukon Cornelius, you know, from Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that.
Anyways, so he's like, I'm going hunting with Randy tomorrow down there in Southern Idaho. I was like, how the hell did you meet Randy? He goes, oh, on Rockslide.
Wow.
So, all right. Well, let's turn this more into about what Justin does. He's here. He came over here actually to get a rifle from Mount Whaley.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So this one's actually for a buddy of mine. He had an old Remington 700. His dad bought for him as a gift, like a high school graduation present, I think it was. And it was a Remington. It didn't shoot very well, but he wanted to keep it because his dad passed away. So he had Matt do a bunch of accurizing for it and. New barrel and new stuff. I mean, just it basically built a whole custom out of it. So that way he still has the gun his dad bought him, but now it's going to be a good, accurate 300 Win Mag for hopefully elk and bear hunting. So
nice.
Yeah.
It's a new barrel, new.
Basically new everything. Trigger Tech trigger. Yeah, we went through and basically swapped everything out but the action. So
nice. I think that I was thinking the other day that I have 7 guns now built by Whaley Precision.
Uh huh.
And Matt does a really damn nice job.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen anything. He did my son's 243, shortened the barrel for him, put the brake on it and stuff, and it works great.
Nice.
So, yeah, I haven't got nothing, and I know that you haven't. Nobody I've heard has gotten anything bad from him. So if you're looking for some custom rifle gunsmith, check out Whaley Precision.
He's going to kill you.
Oh, he hates. Yeah. He told me no more. I was sending him too much traffic, but I love him like a brother, so I'll have to give him the traffic. Let's get back into... Let's get back into Justin early. How did your family hunt? Have you hunted all your life?
Yeah, I was, as early as I can remember, my grandpa lived up in a timber company, my grandpa and grandma, and they opened the logging gates. So they lived at the gate, and so it's 24/7 year-round job. And so my brother and I, we would spend our weekends up there with them all the time. Before we were old enough to hunt, we'd be running around. They give us 22s, and my grandpa would limit us to, he'd give us like 25 or 50 rounds of 22 ammo. So we'd come home, that way we'd come home before dinner. And once in a while, he'd have to come out there with a spotlight and try to find us out in the woods. But so that's how, I mean, we would just, that's what we started with, is just walking around with those little 22s and, you know, chasing squirrels and birds and stuff. And then I think about 8, 9 years old is when we started deer hunting on our own, mostly muzzleloader, because we could do, we had better seasons for the kids that way. And a lot of running around in super thick, crappy, jungly Western Washington brush and trying to chase blacktails around. So, yeah. And then brother went to Alaska. I don't remember what the year was, but somewhere out of high school. And he did a year of dull sheep guiding up there. And that was brought on by an interest in the mountain backpack hunting and stuff like that. And that was, and it must have been 12, 15 years ago now. But ever since then, we've just been hooked. He got, you know, we started doing it right before he went. He went up there, obviously got a big education in it, how it works. And then since then, every year, we've just been kind of doing it more and more and fine-tuning the stuff we use. I mean, it seems like it changes every trip almost, but
right.
Yeah. So
and you're like an equal opportunity hunter, muzzleloader, bow, rifle, whatever.
I don't care. Whatever. Just shit's got to die. So whatever we can get tags for. So
I think that's why me and Justin get along, is I am not out there for the romantics of the hunt. I'm out there to finish the job.
Yeah.
But so how did you get into, I mean, I know how you got into it, but how did you get into the being the gear junkie and the gear reviewer? How did that go down?
Well, I think I've always been a little bit of a gear junkie. Even when we were younger, we used to fish a lot too. I don't have time to fish hardly ever anymore. But we'd be out in the boat. I remember we'd be fishing walleye, like over at Potholes, Moses Lake and stuff. And I'd spend half the day in the boat reorganizing my tackle. And I mean, I would just always have been that kind. I mean, I've always been interested in it. And I used to make my own flies, my own lures and stuff like that. And then of course now with the hunting, I do a lot of, you know, my own stock bedding and scope. I mean, as much of the stuff that I can do, I like to do. I've sewn backpacks before. That was an epic failure. Poor Rob. I know you guys know Rob Melvin, a good friend of mine. That poor bastard had to carry a really, really shitty design pack 10 miles into the backcountry.
Did you sew it up?
I sewed it for him. It was on a bullpack frame, which This was like their old, I've heard they've made better ones now, but I haven't used one. But the old bullpack frame was like 6 inches too short. And so it rides about halfway up the back of your back. It gets no lift. And that poor bastard was like just arched over trying to carry that load. And it was about this far back from his back.
Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Yeah.
He toughed it out. He's still my best friend. So, yeah. But yeah, so I've always been really interested in all the different gear and probably spend more time reading about gear and stuff than I do even hunting. So
well, and it's nice because you actually spend the time testing it too. It's not that you read about it and look at it, and like a lot of people are like, oh, I've read up on it, I'm really educated about it. But you actually go out and spend a lot of time in the woods with it.
Right.
So
well, I know, like, we spend a lot of money on gear, all of us do, and all the, you know, all the guys on Rock Slide and other places. And I hate saying, oh, this is really good, if I don't know that it's gonna work. And so I try to be as honest as I can. And yeah, I mean, if something sucks, it sucks.
Right. Tell everybody how many days on average you are out in the woods.
Well, Bree says it's like, you know, every day, but today I'm not in the woods. No. I don't know. I never counted. I don't think, but well, I did one year a few years ago and I was surprised. We hunt all through the winter. I predator hunt, and then, you know, we get a week or so of spring bear hunting in, and then it's scouting, and then all fall. I mean, every weekend and every week I get like almost 30 days of vacation and sick time a year from my job, plus other days off, and they're all spent hunting, plus the weekend. So it's a lot.
You probably are out more than even Ryan is, because when we talk to you and stuff, you're always out. So.
Yeah, Justin does way more as far as the predator hunting and the duck hunt and waterfowl stuff.
I would say, conservatively, 60 to 70 days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was out 80, I was counting the other day, 80 plus days this year. So mm-hmm. I'm sure you were touching the almost 100 days. Don't tell Bree.
Don't tell Bree. Yeah. No, that poor girl.
She knows. She knows. Yeah. She's Well, and I think that's important to say, because not like you're bragging like, oh, I spent 80 days. It's important to know that, because people's definition of a lot of time out in the woods could be 7 days or 10 days, because right. that is a lot to them. But you really can't run something through the ringer unless you've taken on multiple trips in different climates, conditions. I mean, that's
right.
that's a big factor I think a lot of people don't really realize.
Well, and that's one thing that I've seen too, where we've done, on the Rockside, we've had an opportunity to do reviews on some products where multiple people have done them. And it's amazing where I'll go use a product for a year and then have my review in my mind done. And then I see Luke or Jordan or whoever, somebody else do it. And they're like, they notice totally different things mm-hmm. or it just doesn't work for them for their different kinds of hunting and sure. stuff. So yeah, I think you have to get it out in as many different kinds of weather and, you know, terrain and everything as you can. And then, and you still, I mean, I'll use something for 2-3 years and then realize something else about it. So
mm-hmm. for sure.
That's what the thing that I like about giving stuff to Justin, and actually Justin now actually works for Rockslide. A lot of people don't know that, but he's the what's your official title?
Robbie says I am his assistant. So I'm the assistant editor. I am the assistant editor for Rockslide. So
do you want me to put something different on your cards? Because I'll no, what do you want us to call you?
I think my cards have field editor or something like that. Yeah, so it's close enough.
Right. Well, the reason I kind of bring that up is the fact that when you give something to Justin, not only is it done, is he vetting that piece, that product, but he's also one of the fastest guys to get that actual article back. So it was a natural progression to get him to actually take other people's in, and he can kind of look at it and say, yeah, he used this, or, you know, he's experienced enough to know when a guy's bullshitting, because there's a lot of bullshitters out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And luckily on Rockslide, we don't have much of that.
No, not at all.
Our riders do a really good job of, I mean, I know the gear that I test, usually it's basically ruined by the time you're done with it. and I think it is, from what I've seen, it's the, you know, you don't see very many Rockslide staff selling gear that's in really good shape.
Yeah.
It's usually covered in blood and mud and scrapes and whatever. So
I think it has to be, though, because our Rockslide members are so, they educate themselves so well that they could call bullshit from a mile away.
Right.
I mean, so you can't, I mean, not that we would try to bullshit people, but they're as intuitive as I think that all of our writers are.
Yeah, I agree. I think you don't see the, on Rockslide, you don't see the reviews where, you know, Remington sends a rifle out to a writer and they go take it out to the range with one box of ammo and then write a field review.
Right.
I mean, yeah. We're trying to, we don't always, but we are out there trying to kill something with it, you know, use it like our, like a hunter would. Mm-hmm. So
I like to always see, and now somebody else did it, I'm kind of jumping on theirs, but I like to see they use it for, have 10 days of field use.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you have really 10 hard days of field use, you're going to know the ins and outs and the flaws and the great parts.
Right.
Is there anything this year that jumped out on you that you use product wise?
Let's see. Well, yeah, the Sig Kilo 2400. I mean, I think we had a pretty good idea that was going to be a badass tool when we tried out the 2000 when they first came out with that. But, you know, I know that with all the different ones, I know you have one and I have one, and quite a few people I know have them. And I've heard of some little minor things with Bluetooth connectivity, which it's electronic. So we've seen some issues, but for the most part, man, I've been super impressed with that one. I think it's a big time game changer for being able to just, you know, go out there and you need a range and you need your dial up quick, and it does it quick. So that's probably the one that stands out. That's probably the best improvement overall. And now it's pushing Leica to be better.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's one of our best improvements in the hunting industry in quite a while.
I couldn't agree more.
So
I also agree, because I picked it up and could figure out how to use it within seconds, and I am not used to using those, because usually I'm shooting and Ryan's ranging, you know,
right.
for me. So
well, and I know you had the same experience that I have this year, where, you know, animals are never just standing there, seems like, and so they're always, you know, chasing cows or they're chasing does or whatever, and or moving around, and how quickly you can make the adjustments for that is right. just it's incredible. So
it really is. I really never thought that antelope would be the thing that teaches me that, but me and Lane were, first time I ever hunted antelope, we were hunting them in the rut, and this buck was herding his does like a bull elk.
Right.
And he went from literally 900 yards to 300 yards, back out to like 750, and I literally ranged him 50 times, to the point Lane's like, let me just shoot this thing. So that SIG, you know, if you're thinking about that, and if you're an experienced shooter, long range shooter or not, even if you're shooting 500-600 yards, you still got to know the distance to, you know, whatever your hold is, whether you're dialing or holding over or using your reticle. And I literally ranged and ranged and ranged and ranged, and I was like, this thing is awesome because it's instantaneous. You know what you're dialing.
Yeah. Well, and that I mean, everybody that shoots long range, even archery or long range rifle, knows that the most important factor in shoot, you have to know the exact range. Mm. Everything else is important, but the range is the most important factor in, for sure. So
absolutely. And I know you're a big advocate of the Javelin bipod.
Oh, man. Being able to have a steady bipod for half the weight or better of everything else out there that I've used is... Yeah, I've been using them now for, 2-3 years, I think, at least.
You told me about them, I think, 2.5 years ago, if I was to guess. Yeah.
And most people are skeptical. They see
right
them.
Right here. Yep. Right here.
And looking at that, and they're you know, you're used to using the Atlas or some of the other heavy, you know, the Harris bipods. They're all metal. They're, like I said, they're heavy. They're bulky. And you look at that thing, and it's like, there's no way. This is not going to hold a rifle. I know you've used it on some bigger rifles. I've shot probably at least 200-300 rounds out of a pretty heavy Win Mag. 300 Win Mag, and it recoils pretty hard, and I've never broke anything on it. They used the old attachment adapters for the rifle were not as good. Those would end up turning on you and stuff like that sometimes. The new ones fit a lot better. They have the gunsmith adapters, which I'm going to try shortly. I haven't ever bedded one into a stock, but to me, those are going to be, you know, those will be nice because they are flush to the stock. But yeah, they are. I love it for coyote hunting. Having a bipod under 10 ounces that I can snap into my gun and use like shooting sticks is they're the best thing I've used for that for sure.
Didn't you say Dylan shot his deer off
yeah,
of his?
Yeah, Dylan has shot, he shot his first buck at 525 yards off the bipod. My brother's wife, Katrina, she shot her first deer this year. I don't remember how far, but 200-300 yards. First deer ever off the Javelin. That's all we use now. My brother has one. My dad has one. You know, I do. I know you're using one now. And I still have some other ones that I like for like at the range when I'm just banging things around and whatever. But
banging things around.
They do. For hunting, I haven't seen anything better.
I agree. The first thing we shot was Lane's antelope, and it was not a great shot. Lane's a great little shooter, but it was not a great shot. I think it was 515. And he made a perfect heart shot on that antelope. And then a week later, he made a perfect 750-yard shot using it and
yep.
Double long this bull. So at 5.7 ounces,
yep,
and it's in and off. And this is the hard part for people to get, and it was a hard part for me to get. You don't actually carry it on the gun. You can, but it's not designed to. It's designed to go like in a cargo pocket. It's 5.7 ounces, I
yep,
think.
Yep, I think it's 5.7.
And it's definitely something that, to me, changes the game on the way I can hunt. Because I can take the long legs and I can take the short legs and still, both those together are far less than a Harris or Atlas.
You're still under 10 ounces with the whole thing.
So it's a game changer.
Yeah. Well, it's nice at the range, too, because you were able to swap it back and forth really quickly when we were just shooting. Just
take it to gun. It's a magnet that holds it. You take it from gun to gun to gun. So, all right. I know another big topic for the guys that listen to this is, I know me and you are both Kafaru guys.
Yep.
But you did test out the XO.
Yep.
Mountain gear. What was your overall thoughts on it?
I think it's a good quality pack. It's lightweight. It's compact. I like the shape and everything of it, carrying it through the brush. The materials are to make it lighter. I'd say there's parts of it that, you know, you get kind of holes worn in the side and in the back where you maybe would put your water bottle in those stretchy pockets and stuff. Those could have a tendency to wear out on you. You and I kind of treat our packs the same, where they just get thrown in the back of a side-by-side or thrown in the truck or wherever, drug around, sat on.
Down a mountain.
Sometimes they fall down mountains. Sometimes you slide on them.
Sometimes you roll them down.
Sometimes you did on purpose. But, I mean, it held up to everything. I don't think that someone was just asking this on Rockslide the other day, what you know, materials-wise, toughness-wise, how does it compare? And I'd say that is where Kafaru is better than the others, but better than Stone Glacier, in my opinion, and better than XO. And it's just a balance between they're making theirs the toughest, no matter what. They don't, it just is what it is. They're not going to cut anything for a little bit of weight, where I feel like Stone Glacier and XO building great backpacks are, they're trying to find that balance.
Right.
And so that's, to me, that's the biggest difference. Fit, you know, that's going to be personal, but it was easily adjustable. I had my wife's cousin, she was going on her first elk hunt, and they came over and we test fit the a Stone Glacier with her, a Kafaru, and my Exo that I was testing. And I said, we'll test fit them all on you and see which one's the easy, you know, which one feels best to you. And of course she took my pack. She took my, my Kafaru, hunter frame. But, the Exo was out. I never adjusting it before. Cause when, Steve sent it to me, it fit perfect. I had to do very little adjusting. And, so I hadn't really messed with how it all worked. And it took me a couple minutes to get it sized for, you know, for me at 5'10" down to her at like 5 foot. Mm-hmm. And it fit her good. I said she ended up choosing the other one and
did
packing her bull out.
All three fit her? Could you get them
all? I was able to fit? Yeah, I can make them all fit. Yep. And so that, and to me, that's what's really nice about having these other companies. A few years back, I would have used nothing but Kafaru. 100% would have used no other frames. And now there's other options. So it just keeps driving. I think those three companies are probably the three that I would recommend to someone to go try. But now you have options. You can go try all three and see what fits the best for you. So,
that's a great time to be a hunter.
Yeah.
And if you go to a show like Reno,
the
sheep show, most of them are at that and they'll let you try it on and you can at one, like within 1 hour, try all these packs on and really get a good idea of, they even will bring weight, like Kafaru will bring sandbags.
So did Stone Glacier.
Yeah. And Kurt did from Stone Glacier. So that's like a real big difference. Like everybody says everything fits until you get about 60 pounds in it.
That's a really, really good point. A lot of people, even when they're training, getting ready for hunting, they buy these backpacks and they spend a lot of money. That's one thing that's nice about Rockslide. When you get reviews on Rockslide, you're not getting the guy that just spent, you know, way too much money on a pack that one way or the other, it's going to work really well for him. Cause he's going to be too embarrassed to say, I just spent $800 on something that doesn't work.
In his mind, it's going to work.
So
true. It's natural. We're going to make sure it works and we're not going to tell our buddies that, oh man, I just spent all this money and it sucks. Well, on Rockslide, the guys, even our users, not even just the riders, but we use so many different ones that we're okay with saying, yeah, that one just doesn't work.
Yeah, and there's a trade-off to any of those packs.
Yeah.
There's no free lunch there.
Nope.
And I've tried all three, and I'm dying the wool Kafaru guy, but I tried on the Exo, and to me, and this was, I think, his second generation pack. I don't know if he made a third, but I don't know if it's changed since you have yours. It just had a little too much flex in it for me.
Right.
A little too much movement. Mm-hmm. I did also get, we had an X-Curve 5900 Stone Glacier that I actually tried out, and man, that X-Curve has come a long way.
I've heard a lot of good things, a lot of guys liking that.
That belt is a really nice belt, but I also had it with weight on it. And when I get my stays right, because I put my stays in backwards on my Kafaru and was asking what the fuck was wrong with this backpack. And Ted is like, I think your stays are backwards, because I was cussing Aaron Snyder up and down. And I got the stays in right. When you get that load, like the set, to me, this is my opinion, when you get that 80 to 90 pound, everybody talks about 100. I try not to go over 100 because I want to be able to hunt till I'm 70. It's just, to me, it's a Cadillac of packs.
Yeah.
But they're designed for that.
Right.
The Stone Glacier, Kurt, when I did the podcast with Stone Glacier, his whole thought is minimalist and light as possible. He's a sheep hunter at heart.
Yep. That was my experience with his. I mean, I felt like it was really, I really enjoyed carrying that pack up to at the 80 to 100 pound point is where, and I had the older one. I had the Crux frame, not the new X-Curve, which I think is probably a pretty good improvement. It would fit my back and my butt better, I think. But that's where it started slacking a little bit on the waist belt and things like that. It didn't fit me as well once I got up to 80 and above.
Yeah, but it will do the job.
Oh yeah. I had no fear of that.
It's just, you got to get the pack. To me, I always go back to Kafaru because it's comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're going to have no issue with any of those packs. It's just, you have to put in a little bit of time and effort to see which one fits you best.
Right. Yeah. Quality wise, I agree. I think if you find the one that fits you and the bags, you know, that's one nice thing about Kafaru. They have so many now since they've been at it for so long. You have all these different options, but really pick the one that you like, the way you like to put your gear in and use the pack. And then they're all good quality. Their frames aren't going to break in the backcountry. You know, the belts aren't going to break. They're not going to rip apart. So
right, and the thing I always get hung up on Rockslide and why I don't post about calibers and bullets anymore or backpacks is because I already know.
Right,
I've already had them on my back with weight, and I know this year I packed an elk out with that packed one load out with that 5900. Mm-hmm. We had one from a test we did, and it ended up here. So we, anyways, long story short, it worked flawlessly. But when I put on that, it's all the belt. I'm fat. The belt matters to me.
Right.
So when I put on that Kafaru and lock that belt down, it doesn't move. And mm-hmm. the other belts, nothing wrong with the belts, just for my body shape, they have a tendency to slide.
Right.
And if they slide, shoulders, you know, meets back on your shoulders, and there's the whole point of the load lifting thing is gone.
Right.
So for you, you're a skinnier fella than me, so you could probably get away.
A little. Tiny.
Oh, shit. You're like, you can get away. Skinnier guys can get away with a less quality belt, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any, you know, belly pushing that thing down. And,
right.
And I try to tell people that even if they're not fat, they're just like Robbie Benny is built like a square. He could wear any backpack he wants. He's like SpongeBob or SpongeRob SquarePants.
He is SpongeRob.
The belts matter to me.
Right.
It might not be your thing, but the Kafaru belt sits down and doesn't move, and that's right. why I choose Kafaru.
Yeah.
Well, and we can swap stuff back and forth, which right. is really nice. So if you have another member of your family that hunts, when I shot the bear, and then you shot the bear the year before, we mm-hmm. had to, like, you had to end up using my pack.
Yeah, both times I had the wrong pack for the packing out of bear
for
hole.
For the mission. So. But it is nice to be able to have those options to, you know, grab a, you know, an extra bag here or do this here. So something yeah. to think about if you're going to start investing a lot of money is look at ones that you can, you know, interchange with a family member.
Right. Yeah, the versatility is mm-hmm. huge on those for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that Exo pack, when you watch Steve pack that, it's like 100 and you ever see that sandbag thing?
The video. Oh, I think it was more than that. I think he had like ended up with like 250 pounds of sand.
Well, I saw it came up when I saw your, I was searching to see how Rockslide Review went with that. And that came up. And that's impressive. That's yeah. like Aaron with that goat in the backpack.
I kept waiting. I know when I tried to put too much weight in, I feel like my legs are going to just break. And I kind of was watching Steve do that. I was waiting for his legs to just bow out and break out. Poor guy.
How much do you think weight was at that antelope you had up in the hole?
Well, so it was a whole entire buck antelope.
Was it gutted?
It was gutted. And so I don't know. I didn't weigh it, but it had to be 100 pounds, if anything. I mean, I would think.
Yeah, I would.
I mean, easily. Sure
it was, you know, I mean, yeah. you could see in the photo that it filled up that load sling in that XO and then some. And normally that's not how I would pack a lot of stuff. I've done that with deer before. If it's fast, if I can just strap it in and say, okay, it's hot out, let's just get it to the truck. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an extremely long pack. I mean, it was under a half mile. But the nice thing about when I did that is I was able to see how, because I've never been a big, huge fan of all the different load slings and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But for those kind of cases, or like I really love the Kafaru Rambler, which they won't make anymore. I still have one and it's one of my favorites. But it's so nice to be able to just open the thing up from the frame, throw the shit in there, strap it down, and it just doesn't move. And the Exco did that too. It really locked in really tight. It was easy to clean. I mean, I didn't mess with that. That pack, I laid flat, shoved that thing in there, strapped it down. My dad helped me put it on, and I never stopped.
Right.
Nothing slid. It worked great.
On those those load shelves are popular. Which one do you think of the three packs is the easiest to get into?
The best one is the Rambler for sure, because it's made to just, it's just buckles and it opens up and it doesn't connect at the top. The Stone Glaciers that I've used with the load sling in between and the Exo and most of the Kafarus, the pack starts out on top of the frame and right. you've got to unhook things.
Up.
That's the biggest difference with the Rambler. That's what I like packing with it so much, is because there's nothing over the top of the frame, you know, that Hyplon or whatever they call it that goes over the top. So you don't have to unhook your, the load lifter straps on that, because it doesn't interfere with it. Gotcha. So, but otherwise I thought they all worked really well.
I don't think you can go wrong with any three of those packs. You just have to go get them on, get a little mm-hmm. weight, get 50, 60 pounds in there and make your decision.
Yeah.
Yep.
Even if you have to drive a couple hours to go to one of these trade shows where they're all at, do it, because that's, like Justin said, that's a lot of money you're spending, and you don't want something to, you know, feel like shit on you when you're
right.
hunting.
Well, and put weight in it. That's a key. I mean, there's so many people I think just try them on and like, oh, yeah. wow, that's really comfortable. I feel soft padding. Well, put weight in it, yeah. at least 40, 50 pounds, and then try to borrow it and go hike 2 miles. Because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of packs, even ones that I've worn for a long time that are comfortable, I start hiking into a hunt and I'm fine tuning and adjusting and things mm-hmm. like that. And with about maybe a half mile, then everything kind of gets worked out. And then you can really, the next few miles, you can feel how it's going to ride. You know, you're starting to get hot spots on your hip or your back or things like that.
Right.
And walking around a cul-de-sac and coming back, or walking around at the shows, is, you can get a feel for it, but you really, when you go to buy one, try to find, you know, post, right. Guys do it on Rockslide all the time, where they ask,
say that.
They say, hey, anybody live in South Florida that has, and sure enough, within an hour of them, they almost always find plenty of packs to try.
I've seen that happen over and over again.
I was at a doctor's office and someone's like, oh yeah, Rockslide. And then he's like, I've been wanting to try a Kefaru pack. And I'm like, well, you're in luck, because I've got three in my trunk
what do you
right
try?
Now.
Right.
Get on over here. Let's do this.
Yep.
Because it's so true. You can throw on it, which, don't get me wrong, everybody stocks a good pack unless you're carrying weight. Mm-hmm. Everybody's stocks are built solid until you get about 40 pounds in them, and they all feel great with 20 pounds.
Sure.
That Everybody's stock, the Blue Widow, last one I had, absolutely killed me. About killed me on an elk pack out. I had raspberries on both hips, had freaking sores up on my shoulders. So you've got to test them.
Right. Well, we were talking with Brad Brooks on our last podcast, and we were talking about training and all that kind of stuff, about, you know, like what he does to prepare, you know, and he was saying, you know, you do what you're going to do when you're hunting. So, you know, put all the gear that you're going to have when you go on your hunt in your pack and hike with it, like to get prepared, like to train for your hunt. And it's a really great piece of advice, because then you truly have a good, you know, the amount of food you're going to take for that time, that your gear, your, you know, whatever, because then that really is going to give you the best indicator.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good point. You put a 45-pound plate in your pack, it's going to carry different than if you have your gear or simulated gear in there spread out. It fits in there different. A plate's easy to put against right against your shoulder blades, obviously, but you start putting gear and it's bulky and it fits different, and you got to learn. Absolutely. Yeah. You got to learn how to put it in there the right way, because you put all the weight in the bottom and all these packs will suck. Mm-hmm. You know, if you pack it right, they're going to be really comfortable. So
I didn't really thought about that, but the different volume is what pushes that weight around, and
right,
obviously you want the weight higher up on your back.
Yep.
For sure.
All right, any other gear before we jump into something?
Oh, you know what? I'm gonna, sorry,
oh, any other gear since you left us?
Trying to think what else. Well, I mean, we've been trying out the Christensen Mesa. That's a pretty sweet rifle. Been overall pretty happy with that one. And then the Sig Whiskey scope, man, that thing.
You like it?
Yeah. Yeah. That Whiskey 5 is, well, the other day I took it out with the 300 and, with the Christensen Mesa 300. And, I like to test it. Like, and I know you do the same. When we hunt, we usually do that when we get bored hunting, where we'll just say, you know, we'll glass something as if we were, you know, we're looking for deer, bears, or whatever, and then go, all right, well, we didn't see anything. Let's see what would happen. And so I did that the other day, ranged a rock. I think it was like 1,129 yards or something like that. Cold bore on the Javelin bipod on my bag that I use while I'm hunting. Everything just the same way as if I would have been shooting at a deer or elk or whatever. Dialed it, and the SIG dialed exactly right on. The one that I have is the 3-15,
you have,
I think it is.
The new 2017
whiskey? I have the brand new Whiskey 5. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's got the locking turret, which is awesome, and you get 25 minutes per turn. So for most any hunting, you're never going to turn it more than one turn on that scope. That's a lot.
That's 1,000.
That's a lot. Yeah, I wasn't even all the way around dialing to 11:30. So, but it did. I was pleasantly surprised, and or not surprised, but I guess it confirmed what I thought. I expected the scope to dial right, and I dialed it, and I don't know if it was just really lucky or what, but it hit cold bore dead on elevation at over 1,100 yards.
No, I think so, if it happens more than over and over again, it isn't luck.
No, but it was, I mean, it dialed better than I can shoot, for sure. I mean, it was exactly, it wasn't 2 inches high or low. I mean, it was exactly on elevation wise. So, and I've shot it everywhere in between there, and, I'm yet to miss high or low with that gun, with that scope.
The SIG kind of came out of nowhere with all this stuff.
Right.
They just said, we're going to make probably the best rangefinder on the market right now. We're going to make some top quality optics, and I think they are succeeding.
Yeah. I think they're, hopefully they just keep doing what they're doing with that Whiskey scope line, because The only thing that I wish I had different on that 3 to 15 is I like a little bit more, you know, zoom on it. So if they can get the same elevation travel and make it a 20, you know, 4 to 20 or something like that, which I know they make
what
a bigger one.
What's the magnification?
Mine's, I think, 3 to 15.
Gotcha.
Which that one has more travel in it than their 5 to 20 or whatever it is. Their other whiskey 5. But for most hunting, for deer and elk and bears out to probably 1,000, that 15's sufficient. I'd rather have 20 or 25 power, but
how much does that scope weigh?
Oh man, I can't remember exactly. Like right under 30 ounces, 28.
Does
something
it
like that.
Have a lighted reticle?
It has a lit reticle. Yep.
You can tell I really paid attention.
That, well, I haven't done the review on
it
yet.
I've been reading about what you've been doing, putting up on the forum.
It, I'll tell you what, that reticle is awesome. I've had it out in the dark, night hunting coyotes, and it has like 10 different settings for the illumination brightness. And in the daytime, you'd have to turn it all the way up. You
know, does it have a level plex in that one?
It has a built-in level plex. So for long range shooting, you don't have to put a level on your gun anymore. It's got two little, amber colored arrows that will kind of blink at you and say, Hey, stupid, you're tilting your gun.
I need that.
And, for just that alone to me makes it just awesome. I hate trying to set levels up and get them kind of, you know, get everything dialed right and everything. It makes it easier to mount the scope because you get the gun set level how you want plumb. And then you just turn the scope and turn that feature on, clamp it down in the scope rings and you know, you're good.
That's sweet. And it takes off the use of a level that could get broken or taken off.
Right.
I always forget to look at the level when I'm shooting. I'm like, oh, damn it. I've got it.
That's usually the last thing out of my mouth is check your bubble.
Check your, yep. Yep. Well, and that's nice because all you do is you just click a button. It lights up inside. It tells you you're good. I mean, I'm not one of those. I don't know if you do the same thing, but when I'm shooting it at targets or animals, I don't constantly look back and forth to see. I get my shooting platform set up and I lock my bipod down. I know it's not going to be, unless I move a lot, it's not going to change. So,
and people think it has to be dead center. It doesn't. If it's just, I mean, obviously the farther your range goes out, the more every detail matters. But if you're shooting 800 yards and your bubble's pretty level, you're still going to be fine.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I've done the math on it a few times on how far over you have to be before it starts making a big difference in it. The bubble levels, I think, are the whole point of them is to make sure that you're, like you said, you're within that range. You know, you don't want to be 5 or 8 degrees off. If you're within 1 or 2 degrees of plumb, I can tell you from doing a lot of high-end construction work, most levels aren't that close anyway. So we used to good joke to all know. The time that when we'd see contractors pull up or subs that were working for us, if they didn't have certain brands of equipment, we would usually not hire them again.
Not hire them again.
So, yeah.
They show up with the Home Depot level.
That's right.
They're getting kicked out of the club.
Yep. Yep. It was kind of, for us, it was Stabila or nothing. So
I don't even know what the hell that is.
It's like the Kafaru of levels. How about that?
Oh,
no.
Nice.
I was going to say, it's probably the same thing.
It's like using a Night Force scope versus a $100 Bushnell. So
the old Tasco.
Or Tasco. There you go.
And having somebody say, this is just as good. And I only spent $100 for it.
Excellent.
Yeah. Those always, every time those products come out or those companies come out and everybody raves about how they're just as good as the best thing. And that lasts a while. And then they start breaking or they start, you know, the thing is like my Swarovski binoculars that I use are 15 or 20 years old and they're still really clear, really great binoculars. How many of these other brands have more than 6 months on them and have actually been out of the box.
Right.
And you can still say that they're that clear.
Well, and that's the thing is people are like, well, I can't afford to spend that. Well, if you have one piece of equipment for 15 years, why don't you add up all the pairs of binoculars you've had to buy because they've broken or you've had to replace them?
Yeah.
Like, think about that.
Trying the next best thing every year. It goes from, you know, guy goes out, and, oh man, I got these new Pentax binoculars or I got these ones and I got these. And every year or so, they got a new pair that's the best thing. It's like, well, that's because and it's nothing against those other.
Add that all up. How much have you spent so far? Probably more.
Right.
And
right.
People will make, they bought that product. It's an emotional decision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they want it to be the best. And in their mind, it is the best.
Sure.
Where I think Rockside differs, not only with that guy and our writers and our staff, is most of those guys are pretty open-minded. And if I look through a pair of binoculars and I say, oh, well, those are better than Brand X, I will say, I think these are better than Brand X, and it's no emotion involved with it.
Right.
So I know. I just, I laugh when people say Brand X is the best, but that's what I own right now. So of course it's going to be the best, but yep. Have you actually taken the time to look through it? And that's not a knock on that person.
Sure.
Because that's human nature.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Just like people say, oh, unbiased reviews.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Because I'm no like, there's always some bias. I agree.
Yep.
Yeah,
even everybody has a bias.
Even
I don't care
subconsciously,
who you are.
Even if you don't think you're biased,
right.
Something about that is pulling yep. you in one direction or the other. So,
right.
You know, it's just the way well, it is.
And, you know, we have, luckily for us, we have the opportunity to use all different kinds of gear and we get to test all different kinds. But, I mean, if I have two kinds of gear that I'm going to go buy and spend my own money on and, you know, say like two pairs of hunting pants and I really like Kenton from First Light. I think he's a good dude. I think the people that work for him are awesome people. If I have two pairs of pants that are really close or, you know, both mm-hmm. do the job, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to be biased towards that company absolutely. Because I like their service or I like the people that work there or what they stand for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's
well,
always
yeah,
bias.
They put money back into land conservation mm-hmm. and they're hunters themselves and they're right. genuinely good people. Their mm-hmm. customer service is great. Why wouldn't you want to put your money towards that
right.
than a company that you call because something happened to the product and you can't get anybody on the phone or they're assholes?
Right.
It seems like a fairly obvious choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just sometimes like people better. So,
right.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of that. But I listen to tons of podcasts and it's always funny when people, and Aaron, they actually did a podcast about it. It's the best.
Yeah.
The best.
Or it's an expert or you'll never find a better product than this.
Right.
That puts you in a bad situation when a month later you're like, mm-hmm. look at these. These are the best.
Right.
And I try never to use that. And I try to tell people that do writing for us, never use those words because in a month there might be something different. It always changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, and put your money where you're going to need it because a lot of people, like if they hunt where we hunt, where the visibility is terrible and you're archery hunting, you might not need the best or the most expensive right. yeah. binos. That's stupid for you to put all your money on that when you might need a better pack. So pay attention to the kind of hunting that you're doing.
Absolutely.
And the terrain that you're doing it because you won't need some of the stuff that Justin needs or right. Ryan needs or I right. need because it's just that, different.
And don't you think Matt does? I probably Matt's reviews are some of my most favorite reviews of any I've ever read. And because that guy is if there's somebody that's unbiased, Matt's maybe the guy.
Yeah, that's true.
But he'll say all the time, yeah, you know what? You don't need to go spend the $2,500 on the Swarovski. They're great. But I found this other pair, then they're $800 of binoculars and they're damn close. And he the way he mm-hmm. tests things, he can back that up with science the way mm-hmm. he does it. But he's good about that, I think, about saying, you know what? You don't need that one. You can kill stuff with this one too. And it's still good quality.
I couldn't agree more. I was just, when I said unbiased, I was like, almost like caveat, unless you're Matt Cashel.
Unless you're
because
Matt. Yeah.
He purely is looking at the glass.
Yeah.
When he does his optics reviews, mm-hmm. he's purely looking at the coatings, there's shit that he, you know, like chromatic aberration. I understand what that is, but he also gets into other things that I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, Matt?
Right.
But he knows what he's talking about.
Yes,
he does. I'll let him be because he is like a little Einstein when it comes to optics.
Yep.
Well, and a lot of people are like that. Like everyone gives Aaron a bad time from Kafaru because they're like, oh, of course you're going to say your pack. If you called Aaron and said, this is what I'm doing. This is where I'm going. This is how long I'm going to be gone. What do you think would be the best product for me? He'll tell you. He'll give you the rundown and he won't try to sell you other bullshit that you don't need, right. like extra pockets and all this. He'll be like, nope, you don't need that. I've heard him say that to people at shows, mm-hmm. so I can say that with 100%
certainty. We're not here to blow smoke up Aaron's butt here, but...
No, because we'll tell him if he's an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely. But I've physically heard Aaron say, well, if that's what you're doing, a Stone Glacier would probably be a better pack for you.
Yeah.
Who does that? And I'm not trying to say that... He always is doing that, but I'm just saying, people always say, oh, you're just trying to sell a product. Well, I've heard him say, buy a Stone Glacier or buy a REI pack if that was your needs.
Right.
Or that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he's going to be biased, right? I mean, he works for the company.
Absolutely.
And he designs their pack. So for one thing, he has a kind of in a good position because if he has that conversation with someone and says, ooh, yeah, you probably should go buy the Stone Glacier, then he's going to go back and he's going to talk to Frank and the other guys that he works with and go, hey, guys, we need to build this because
yeah.
I just had to answer it. Hard question, and we don't have that. We got to build it.
That's a great point because that's totally the truth. But some people, I mean, you meet people in this industry that own the companies or whatever, and they're brutally honest, because they know with that honesty, when you need something that their need, that what they have is going to suit your needs, you're going to come to them because mm-hmm. they're honest. And yep. that's super important.
Yep, I agree.
So give us the rundown of the gear you use, because I'm late to the game. We already, I mean, besides what you already talked about, mm-hmm. like tell us the boots you're wearing, because that's always a question that we get.
Well, I have my, I've never done a review on them, never got a free pair of them or anything like that. But the boots, my favorite boots that I rely on, that I use all the time, are the Zamberland Guide 960s. Those fit my feet great. They last for hundreds and hundreds of miles and hold up really well. This year I did try some Loa boots and those worked great. My first pair, they leaked a little bit and Loa's looking into that to see what was the deal with that one. That was my only negative that I really had on those boots.
What ones were they?
They were the Loa Irox. They were new for 2017 and they're not the same. They're not the same boot as a Scarpa most of the time, or my Zamberlands that I wear. They're made to be a little bit lighter. But for a lot of my hunting, those were the way to go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice. I mean, you don't always need to have mountain boots. So, I really like those. And then, I'm using the SIG, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. I use mostly Swarovski other than that, but not always. Mm-hmm. I do like their spotting scopes. I like the, Outdoorsman is what I use for my optics heads for my tripods. They're another one of those that are kind of expensive. You know, you're spending mm-hmm. $300 just for the pan head on your tripod, but it works. It's the best one I found for me. For my uses, it's the one that I like using the best. That's one thing I try to spend a lot of money on also, or get the best quality I can get, is tripods. People like, they look at one and they go, how come this carbon fiber tripod's worth more than this one? They do the exact same thing, until you're sitting on a ridge and it's windy mm-hmm. and the thing's shaking and you're trying to see, you know, if a buck's legal or if it's worth going 5 miles around the side of a canyon to go after. And then you realize why some of them are better than others.
Well, and you're into photography. You're getting big, and that's an issue for you.
Right. Yep.
You know,
and
you
that
can't
makes
have
a big
shaky
difference. Right. And that's where you notice it a lot. When you try to get, you're sitting there trying to get your digiscoping photos, and you come back and you think you can see it really well, and then you look and they're all blurry. And then you're like, screw it, I'm going to go spend more money to get better gear. But yeah, well, that does
go
really...
with what you need for yourself. And
that's
one of your caveats. So
yeah.
Clothing.
Clothing.
Would you?
I'm mostly using First Light. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they're just one that I just really like them. To be brutally honest, I think that Sitka has the best outer layers. Mm-hmm. I do wear a lot of their pants. I think it's the Timberlines is the ones that I really like. They're probably my favorite hunting pants. Although I don't wear anything Kuyu, but I wish that all the pants had zippers in the sides of the hips, like I think it was the Attack pants that they had those in. To me, that's the one thing that every company should at least offer something like that, because that venting is huge. Oh yeah. We all sweat like pigs most of the time when we're hiking, and that's the one thing I wish that they had. But yeah, for otherwise,
I don't have to hike to sweat.
That's true. Not always.
So do you do the First Light base layers?
Yes. I think they make the best base layers, at least that I've used. I haven't used every single base layer out there or anything like that, but I've used Kryptek, and I've used Sitka base layers and lots of other non-hunting brands.
You used the word best.
I know I did. I said for me. They're the ones that, I don't know. I really like them, and they're comfortable.
And this is 2017, so in 2 years, when you're listening to this podcast and something else has come out, be like,
sure.
Well, Justin said in that podcast, you liar.
Well, right. Everybody's every year is coming out with new and better.
Yeah,
and
I mean, things
stuff.
Are going to advance. Right. Technology advances. So
yeah. For clothing-wise, for one thing that came out this year that I really – actually, there's two things that I really enjoyed using is the First Light Puffy Pants. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of days, because it's not that cold a lot. So they're not something that gets used for weeks and weeks and weeks, but the times I've used them, they've been really good. I was out crawling around the ice last weekend chasing them damn ducks.
I saw the picture.
And I was kind of a little bit rough on them, and so far they've held up fine. They're great. I like how easy they are to put on and off. And the other thing that they came out with this year that I really enjoyed using is the Sawtooth jacket. At first I saw that and I didn't think I would be a fan, because it's like wearing, it's kind of heavy for what it is, but if you take and you replace a fleece that you might have worn, or like a hooded sweatshirt, it's really nice. And the one complaint I have with that is the sleeves are too tight. They either need to be, I think, a little bit less tight, or they need to be more stretchy. Other than that, I really like it.
Well, come on, Popeye.
So, well, I'm not going to explain how that happened, but you can guess. I take and I wear that like in place of my shama, like my hooded merino that I wear underneath.
The base layer.
Yeah, and that to me, that's the perfect, if when it gets a little bit colder or in the early season, I think I might wear it where I don't need a jacket and I could just wear that as the outer layer.
I agree. That's one of the pieces that
I really liked it.
I didn't think I'd use it.
Yeah.
And then I got it and I'm like, man. Well, shit, this has got all kinds of uses.
Yeah. Oh, I'd wear it every day if I could probably. but yeah, no, that was a good one. Trying to think if there was anything else.
So, like gloves, what are you using? Because I have an issue with my feet and my hands getting cold.
Gloves, I think. Well, I mean, there's all different kinds. If you just want really super warm ones, some of those like big, huge winter gloves. I don't remember what they're called, but First Light makes those big mittens.
Yeah, those
Grizzlies.
Big.
Those are great when it's like, you know, you're out glassing for hours or sitting out there for hours. Mm-hmm. They're not very useful when you're. Right. You're gonna have to take them off to do a lot of things. But the ones that I've used for years. And I still do is like glow mitts. We just buy them from Cabela's.
Glow mitts.
They're a fingerless glove. They're usually made out of fleece. And there's, I think, a few different companies that make them though, but they're a fingerless glove and they have a mitten that flips over your hand and it's magnetic. Most cases, sometimes they're Velcro. To me, those are the best for keeping your hands warm. You can put a hand warmer in the mitten part and then it flips on and off. It's not one of the latest, greatest high tech brands, but we've used them for probably 15 years and they're great.
I'll try just about anything once, I think, especially that.
Cause, right.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to shoot a gun if your hands are so cold that you can't feel your fingertips.
Right. Well, and you struggled with that on your buck this year, right?
I did.
Down in southern Idaho, that was freezing.
I had two pairs of gloves on, actually, right. And a hand warmer inside them. And I had a North Face, like, just really thin, you know, just winter gloves. And then I had the Outdoor Research, the battery operated gloves over it. And it still wasn't enough.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if there ever will be something that will be enough in certain temperatures.
Yeah.
But
that was just a bad, I mean, we're totally exposed in the wind and there's nothing you can do when you're waiting on animals.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So
is that it?
I think I've got the rundown.
All right, we're gonna talk about wolves.
Yeah, go for it.
Because the biggest question I got, and I'm still probably getting them, is not still probably. I got one last week about how Justin calls in wolves.
He's the wolf whisperer.
Well, if you guys don't know, the people that don't know, last spring we went bear hunting. The snow line was really, really low, so we didn't actually see many bears. I think I saw one.
Yeah,
and. So the Rockside Annual Bear Hunt turned into a wolf hunt, thanks to Jimmy Tippett's.
Yep.
And so kind of take us through what you did, because I know nothing about predator calling.
Yeah. Well, I've done it for quite a few years now. I mean, and learning every time I go out. My brother and I, man, we'll go out and we'll go hunt. And he hunts in North Dakota because he lives there, and I hunt, you know, Washington and Idaho. And it's funny because after any day that either one of us goes out calling, then we'll call and, you know, we sit there and we'll talk for an hour about all the things that worked and didn't work. And man, I don't think I could like say, if you do this, this, and this, it's going to work. Cause it seemed like one time we do one thing and it works great. And the next time the coyote barks at you and runs away. So it's a constant learning thing for
so
me
it's
for
like
sure.
Call an elk.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing that could work today, tomorrow you go out there in the same area and it might just not work at all. So, I just try a lot of different things. That's probably the biggest thing. The one or the few keys that I think always are important is, you know, being really careful how you approach where you're going to call. They have to be there. So that's one thing that really made us successful in the spring is, you know, Jimmy saw a wolf. And then when he did some more investigating after that wolf was walking by me eating lunch there, he found a bunch of tracks in that same area. And it looked like an area where, obviously, it wasn't just like some wolves had run through and crossed the road and he saw a track in the mud. There were wolf tracks all over the place. And so with talking with him and Ryan, we obviously figured that, you know, there had to be a den close by or a gathering. I mean, for whatever reason, there were a lot of wolves hanging out in that area. So that's the biggest thing is that they got to be there. you know, you if calling in a canyon and there's nothing in there, you're, obviously you're not going to get shit. So getting as close as you can to them seems to help. You know, watching the wind, all the normal things hunting are important. And then we just, I think maybe we were just lucky, or maybe, you know, the experiences that we all did have with different kinds of hunting. We went in there, and when you and I set up to try to call the wolf, was it the next day, I think, after he'd seen one, or 2 days later or whatever. It was spring. We knew that, you know, likely the wolves had puppies around, and I didn't have any wolf sounds on my Fox Pro. So we went in there and set up, and we did coyote pup sounds, coyote pup distress. And I remember once we got it all set up, Ryan and I, you know, we had a perfect, like, natural blind kind of built up in the trees there that we were able to sit behind. And man, I didn't think it was going to work, because I never thought I'd be able to call a wolf in. And we sat down there, and I remember looking and telling you something like, just get ready, get your safety off and everything, because it's probably not going to happen. But if it does, it's going to be like, it could be really, really fast. And I didn't have any idea it was going to be that fast.
Oh, me so neither.
I don't think the call was on more than, what, 20 seconds, 30 seconds at the most?
Oh, dude, at the most.
Yeah, it was awesome, because one thing with calling that I've learned is I second guess everything. So if you're sitting out there and you go make a whole bunch of sets and you don't call an animal in, everything you're doing is wrong, and you don't know what the things are that are right and what's not. So when we were able to go out there, we set the call up, like I said, and turned it on. Ryan was ready and made an amazing shot as that wolf came running in. And do you remember what the range was? It was 70 yards maybe where you shot it at?
It wasn't more than 80, because when I raised it was like 70 to 80.
Yeah. Okay, and I know it was close. And I mean, we're not talking like this wolf came sneaking in. It was running full speed, and just nailed it. And we were just in shock.
I was.
I couldn't believe it.
Justin had called in. I've shot coyotes, but never called him in an electric call.
Right.
Electronic call. And I'm sitting there, and he's telling me this. He's like, oh, if it happens, it's going to happen fast. And I'm like, well, I have no, you know, experience either way, so I'm ready.
Right.
And he hit that call, and she shot out of the creek bottom so fast. She was on a dead sprint.
Yep.
And she just jumped up on this old skid road, and I shot her.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa, that happened way faster than I thought it would. And the one thing I took away from that, though, is that day we both had earplugs in.
Yes.
That were electronic.
Right. And that's something I do always calling now.
Yeah, and I never really put that together, because we could talk back and forth. Because usually I'm deaf anyways. If I have earplugs in, I'm damn sure not going to hear you. But you said something to me, and then I said something back to you. And for me, I had in the sport ear. They're ghost something. I can't think of the name of it. But what did you have in?
I was using the some from Peltor that I've been testing out this year. They're a Bluetooth and everything. You can actually hook them to your phone. And I mow the lawn and listen to music with them all the time. And
sweet.
Nice. Yeah. Talk on the phone. I'll stop. And you can talk into them. They're just like the headphones we're wearing, kind of, except for they don't have a mic. But you can hear when you talk to them. But yeah, like I said, that it's huge, getting back to the hunting part of it, being able to talk really quietly back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I also hear... like I've been calling and then hear things that, cause you can turn those things up, man. And you're hearing the wind, you know, brush the grass and stuff. And so, like you said, if someone
amplifies too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then the nice thing is we hunt with brakes most of the time on most all of our guns, and it's a necessary deal for sure. You're just going to be sitting there with your ears ringing, not knowing what the hell happened.
Cause that shit happens.
I always carry headphones now, or I don't have a pair of earplugs like you have, but those would be the way to go.
Oh yeah, I never really thought about that, but it makes sense. And in all kinds of hunting, any kind of hunting, using a big gun. Mm-hmm. So take us through. We called
Before you do that, tell me what predator call you were using.
So I use the call that I've used for years is a Fox Pro Fury. I think it's an older one that they've now since moved on to newer versions of that. But, and then the sounds that we were using, was coyote pup distress. So it sounded like a bunch of puppies, you know, hollering, hungry, whatever, looking for mom, whatever they do. And, you know, probably a recording of a den or something like that. Mm-hmm. And our thought process there was either A, we can trick them and they'll think if they sound close enough, I don't know what wolf pups sound like really, but if they sound like coyote pups, maybe they'll think there's some pups. Or we know that, you know, wolves like to kill all their competitors out there. And so the other thought was, well, they'll hear coyotes and go try to kill them. And so I don't know if that was a motherly instinct or an aggressive wolf instinct, but I know we turned it on and she was pissed. So, mm-hmm. And those are the ones that you kill. The ones that come running in. She wasn't scared of anything. She wasn't being cautious. I think she probably would have run straight downwind of us the way she was charging in. And so that's what we did. We did the coyote pup distress, and it worked great.
She was like a rocket. I mean, yeah. She just blew out of the bottom. So take us through the next 2 days. You guys went back in there to try to kill some more, and it didn't work out the next day, and then you kind of changed your game plan.
Yeah. The next day, I think it was the next afternoon, Jeff Brozovich, I could kind of tell when we were all hanging out at camp and stuff that he, like most of us, he had an interest in shooting a wolf, and he didn't say anything. I think he was trying to be polite and say, I want to go after the next one or whatever. but I can tell he did. And so I was like, if you want to go in there, man, I'd happy to go in there again. And so we did, him and I, and I think it was Billy. I think Billy George went in there with us.
I don't remember the next day because I took.
It was just me and Jeff, wasn't it?
Well, in the picture you guys had, that was Billy's the,
that
in
wasn't
it
that day.
Yeah,
it's a different day.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? It was Casey and Billy. They were going to hunt bears, so they hiked in halfway with us and went bear hunting.
Looked off that skid.
That's what they were doing. So anyway, so Jeff and I, we hiked in. Yeah, the next afternoon, and we set up and did the exact same thing that Ryan and I had done. Because we just figured, why change it up if it worked? Let's go ahead and do the same thing. And one of the things that led us to go back to that spot, one thing I forgot about when we were talking about the other earlier one, is that 10 minutes after Ryan shot that wolf, we had waited for a little bit. We called for a little bit longer because see if we could get another wolf to come in, which we didn't. And so after a few minutes, we walked down to go recover the wolf that had died out there. And it was probably 10, 15 minutes later, all of a sudden, out of the blue, wolves started howling all around us up on the ridges. Like, they knew that wolf, when he shot it, never made a sound, never whimpered, never barked, never did anything. And yet, I think we both felt like those wolves that were howling around the ridges, like, they knew, they knew something had happened. So it was really weird.
It was weird.
And, but because of that, we thought, well, let's just go in and let's set up the same thing. So Jeff and I snuck in there. We set up, we tried the same thing. And I think it was maybe 15 minutes of calling off and on and no response. And Jeff says, well, let's just howl. I don't remember exactly the details of how it decided, but he did some howling and we started getting responses. These wolves started howling. We messed around with them for a while and just we ended up moving around and hiking through the trees and doing all different stuff, trying to get them to make a mistake. And they were definitely beating us that day. And they ended up circling us, getting behind us, and sitting up there where we were calling from originally. and so we were talking with each other. We're like, well, we're not going to win this. They're definitely, they've got the advantage. So we checked out the area. We looked at some other options and hiked out and said, well, let's just come back tomorrow. And so that wolf kind of followed us all the way down the ridge, howling and making a ruckus as we hiked out. It was probably one of the most eerie things out in the woods that I've probably dealt
with.
That
is a scary sound.
I've been in the woods in the dark so much that most everything doesn't bother me. I don't worry about bears and cougars and stuff like that much, or wolves really, but that made the hair on your neck stand up for sure.
Yeah.
And, cause at that point, I mean, we always know that wolves and cougars and stuff watch us out there, but you knew that they were.
And there wasn't just one.
No, there was a lot of them. I don't know how many we heard howling, but there was quite a few. And, so the next day we went up there, a few other guys, I think it was Shane and Eric and Billy hiked in with us. At that point, I mean, we're not thinking, we thought we were pretty lucky just to get one wolf. Mm-hmm. And, so our really, I would say what we expected to happen was we'd hike in there, get some calling going. And since the wolves seemed like they were staying in the area, we were kind of expecting we'd probably get at least to get some howls and hear them. And maybe maybe it would work, but really confidence wasn't that high. And, so we went up there with our new plan. We were going to set up the call up down the draw in a different area where hopefully we could gain the advantage over the wolves. And, there's more open spots where we could see. And, so we set it up. I hiked down in the bottom, set it up and came back. And Jeff was kind of like hemming and hawing, and I could tell something, he didn't like something, but he didn't want to say anything because we're kind of hunting as a group. I said, well, what's up? And, he's like, I don't think we have enough openings. And so we kind of talked about it, and he was right. He made the right call. We decided that we needed a reset. So we went and I hiked back down there, back and around, grabbed the call. We moved it further down the drainage. And our goal there was, the wolves the day before had come in, but they didn't come into the open. So they got really close, but they were able to stay in the brush where we couldn't see them. And so what we were trying to get was in a spot where we could be above and have it enough brush where they felt safe to come in and get downwind of the call like they try to do, but have some openings so we knew they'd have to cross some small openings where we'd get an opportunity to see them and shoot them. And so that's what we did. We got on our second attempt, we got in the spot where we thought was good. The other three guys just sat back a ways, so they were not really up where we were hunting, but they just sat back to kind of watch. And we talked and everything, and our plan was, one of the things that I do, like elk hunting and coyote hunting too, is I will call for a little while and then turn it off. So that way when we have those more tentative wolves or coyotes or whatever come in, they can't just zone right in, or like an elk where they can just pin you down and know that there should be an elk there, or there should be a rabbit flopping around or whatever, mm-hmm. and make them search for it. And so that was kind of that was our plan when we talked about going in there. So we did that. We called for just about a minute, maybe a little bit less, and did the same thing. We did some pup distress, turned it off, and within a few seconds after turning it off, I hear Jeff Russell to my right, and sure enough, I look, and I could tell the way he moved a little bit that he had seen one. And here comes a big male wolf coming down through there sneaking. I mean, it was like something you'd see in a movie. It was amazing watching that wolf sneak down through the brush and stop. And it was very, it was really, I don't know what the word is, cunning or tentative, or, I mean, you could tell it was smart, right? It wasn't just going to run in like the first one did. And, but we had just, we played it perfectly where it felt safe enough to keep sneaking down and trying to get around downwind of that call. And it stopped in the open and Jeff ended up killing it. So, I'm really excited to go back this spring. I think we're probably more looking for wolves this spring than we right. are now bears at this
know,
point.
Now we so, know it works.
Yeah, it so definitely.
We just got to put enough out there to make it get in the right spot.
Yep, and we got this year we'll be using the Shockwave. So Fox Pro sent us a Shockwave, which I've been out using, been killing coyotes with it. It's a bigger call. It's got more volume, and we were able to turn the speakers and just kind of do some things with it. It's got a lot of new technology in it, which I'll try to detail when I get the review done on that. But it does everything that the old call did, plus a ton more.
Got more calls in it?
It holds the same amount, I believe. It might have a bigger hard drive. Those things hold so many calls that they hold way more than I'm ever going to use. I think they hold like 500 calls or something
wow,
like that.
That's
so,
a lot.
Yeah, but so far it's been working really well. The one thing that I do like about that Shockwave that I think is one thing that is a small feature, but to me it's a big thing, is they included a tripod mount in the bottom of it. I've always wanted that on all my calls.
That makes
sense. So the nice thing is it's so simple to set it up now, because you can just stick it right on top of your tripod. Mm-hmm. You can position it whatever height you want. You can get it up out of the brush so you're not calling into the brush. So they should all have that. But
That makes sense.
That's a good like small feature, small thing that they did. That I think, like I said, it's a big deal. Well, so,
devil's in the details.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you say to somebody, because what I've found is calling wolves is kind of a new thing.
Yeah,
obviously, because
right.
they just started hunting.
We just got to start hunting.
Ago.
Yep.
What would you tell people that's the same or different than setting up for coyotes?
Well, I think the difference is coyotes seem to be everywhere. So, I mean, if you just go out in an area and we all have been around coyotes so much more, wolves is a new thing because I don't live in Idaho. So, it's learning where they're at. That's the key is if you just find some areas where there's a lot of tracks, you know, any kind of sign where you can tell that they're in, you got to find where they're at first. And then, that's probably the biggest thing. Since we're still new to it, it's not like we've killed dozens and dozens of them or anything like that. But I think, you know, one of the keys is for sure trying not to be seen or smelled before you start calling.
Right.
One thing we did both times was we got in there, we set up, and we got quiet for a little bit. And we just let, because animals, I think we would all agree, they see us and hear us walk by or drive by and things like that in the woods all the time. We've all seen deer just stand there and freeze and wait for you to go by and go, yeah, okay, you didn't see me, sucker.
Right.
And we drive by them all the time or walk by them. So I think even if they do see you walking into an area, and then you wait that 15 minutes or something and then start calling, they're assuming you're long gone. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably something that I try to do every time. The earmuffs make a big difference, because now we can hear, when things coming up, moving around and stuff like that. I really like that technique or gear or whatever. Yeah, I mean, other than that, it's just trying different things. Mm-hmm. I like to, at least in my mind, I'm pretty confident that the coyote sounds is something that's going to, I think that's a good tactic for the wolves, just because they're maybe not always hungry using a predator sound, you know, like using a dying rabbit or dying deer or something like that. But to me, from what I've seen with the wolves and all the reading I've done and videos and stuff like that, and just what I've seen, I like trying to kind of pick on that predator instinct that they have and that aggressiveness that they have, to where I think it seems like a good strategy going in there and trying to make them basically piss them off with the coyote sounds, you know, like we'll do with the elk hunting. Sometimes you can make cow sounds at them all the time and they don't really react, but you go in there and you start bugling at them,
right?
And you can piss those things off and they'll come in and make a mistake. So
yeah, I agree with that. And I think that if you're bear hunting already, mm-hmm. you might as well just throw that call in.
Absolutely.
Because we do need to kill more wolves.
Yep.
They're definitely overabundance at the moment.
Yeah, it's amazing. Every time I come over here, I don't think we've been anywhere in Idaho that I've hunted, at least, that I haven't run into wolf shit and wolf tracks. I mean, almost everywhere you go, you see them now. So
yeah, they're well over their 100.
Oh,
they're supposed to be 10 breeding pairs in a hunt. We laugh because me and Justin sent me some wolf articles yesterday, and
yeah,
they're so far over the quota of what they wanted.
Right.
That they're 10 times over it.
Really. Oh, easy. And that's even what they're admitting. And the thing is, how do you count them? Because there's a lot more wolves out there than we see. I mean, we know that cougars and wolves and stuff, they're sneaky. You're not going to see right. them. So how do you count them?
Yeah, you just guess. They did buy. That's their best guess. Yeah. And I bet they're guessing on the low side.
It has to be, because everywhere we go, we see tracks. So
yeah, I'm going to have Justin Webb on from the Foundation for Wildlife. I forgot the name of the Foundation for Wildlife Management.
Yeah,
and he's really good at explaining why we need to. He's not anti-wolf either.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Either am I. I don't blame the wolf. The wolf's doing what the wolf did. I'm Absolutely. A little pissed off at the government and the people involved in putting those wolves out there.
Right.
I think that they kind of lied to the general population.
I know that they did.
Yeah. So I'm a little pissed at those people. I'm not a little. I am pissed at those people. The wolf's going to do what they do. They're going to be. They're a predator just like us. They're yep. going to kill things.
Yep. And they are sure fun to go out there and do battling and try to outsmart those suckers is really fun.
Well, the one thing that I'll say in the... It's like, I'm torn with this, is it was pretty surreal seeing that thing blast out of that bottom that morning.
Right.
I mean, that's happened for, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. of years, I'm guessing. But to see it, it's just like, it takes you back in time. It's like that is an alpha predator.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because what if that would have been, I mean, you could have been hiking on a trail with your family and that could have been your kid crying, you know?
Right.
Like it would have been after it.
They're just... And I hate to use the word majestic, but that's kind of what they are. Yeah. They're just.
Oh, I think so. And like, I mean, a lot of people ask, because they get why people that aren't necessarily against hunting, but they just kind of have understanding. Maybe they don't hunt, but they go, okay, well, I know the guys, they like to go out and shoot the deer and the elk and the ducks and whatever, because they eat them. And, mm-hmm. and I get asked all the time, why do you shoot coyotes? Mm-hmm. Why do you go after wolves? You're not going to eat them, right? I'm like, no, from what I've heard, I'm not going to try one because they smell like shit. So. I know. I think Steve tried to cook one.
They smell like ass.
He didn't like the taste of it either. But anyway, yeah, they do. It's not something that I'm going to eat, but they have to be managed. We hunt a lot of private ranches where we deer hunt, and we hunt coyotes, Rob and I do. And we would never go out there and try to shoot every coyote. I mean, I like seeing them. I like hunting them. I like the challenge of it, but they have to be kept in check.
Absolutely. This ain't Disneyland.
No.
Yeah.
They are vicious killers. And they need to be, they don't need to be eradicated, but they need to be extremely, extremely hunted hard.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. If nothing else, it pushes them. It makes them, you know, right now, as the snow starts piling up, the elk are just, they're fair game for the wolves, right? There's nothing pushing them out and pushing them and making them kind of basically try hard. I mean, it's just easy for them right now. And by us being out there, kind of pushing the cougars and the wolves and stuff around, it makes them at least, it challenges them more, right? I mean, it's too easy for them right now. Right.
Well, what I don't think people really get is that they're like, well, you know, all these animals have been around forever and, you know, they control themselves, their population, like that's the ecosystem or whatever you want to say. But what they're not understanding is they're getting reintroduced in places that they weren't originally. And like we as our population are to manage it are messing with that. So it's not like this is just us going in there as hunters and trying to dictate what should be there and what shouldn't be there because we're, you know, wanting to tweak the natural balance because it's already been tweaked.
Right. We've had a huge impact on it, obviously.
So it's not like this is just us suddenly ambushing a location that's never been managed or, you know, tweaked by, well, you know, wildlife management somehow.
The wildlife management was using their, whatever you want to say, algorithm or their, they were using it without the apex predator involved.
Right.
Without the wolf there. Mm-hmm. So now they have to totally redo all of their seasons, all of that, and they're trying to figure that out because you can't just throw in an apex predator. A, that's a bigger species than was ever here before, and think that they're just going to get along happy like the Lion King.
And it's just going to balance out, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and
then human encroachment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Human, you know, we're taking up a lot of their old stomping ground, so there's no way to get in there and say, okay, we have to kill this many wolves because they don't know how many wolves we have to kill. Mm-hmm. We have to kill, they have to be like a coyote. We have to kill them season. They have to be open all year long. And there has to be some kind of incentive, like the Foundation for Wildlife Management, mm-hmm. where you get reimbursed to kill those wolves.
Right.
If we'd have been members, we'd have got $200 each.
Hey, it was worth it anyway, but that would have been better.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, I think, but people, a lot of non-hunters are, that's the part of the equation that a lot of non-hunters are not realizing is that hunters work with wildlife management to try to keep all the species in balance, not just going out there and having a field day on whatever they choose to shoot that they see that day. It's
right.
so much more than you realize if you're not educating yourself on that topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree.
I get that question a lot that, you know, well, do you eat it? Well, no.
No, we don't eat it. Fucking eat it.
Yeah. We eat and we eat a lot more than a lot of people do.
Right.
I mean, we eat the bear that we kill and
cougar.
The cougar and the deer and the elk, you know, but wolves and coyotes, no, I'm not going to eat it.
Ask the same people. Did you eat the mouse you killed under your cabinet the other day when you killed it?
Spider.
No. Exactly. So
that's
I mean,
a good point.
Sometimes,
and I'm going to remember that.
Sometimes you just, I mean, you know, they're in a place where either there are too many of them or they're in your kitchen.
Think about it. You're managing that population of spiders and mice in your house. So
absolutely.
You ask yourself that question before you ask
about
me that question.
Mice and insects and fish, they don't have souls.
Right.
They're different. Right. They're different in that. I totally agree. We were talking about that the other day. My daughter, who's 15, the poor girl who drove me 6 hours last night in the snow over to get here. It was a good driving test for her and practice. But
absolutely.
Poor Alyssa. But we were talking about that the other day with the different, I can't even think of the word I'm thinking. So with all the land questions that are out there now with, the wilderness and the different, you know, all the stuff, the changes that are being made out there. And, she's like, you know, she's in public school, so she hears a lot of liberal agenda and a lot of, you know, they're getting all their information from the news.
And she's going to school in Washington.
And she's in school in Washington.
Yep. Liberal, where you guys live.
And she's like, well, this just doesn't make sense, Dad. I mean, everything should be wilderness and it should be all happy and national parks and everything. I said, well, what's the difference between a national park? I mean, or why is it okay that in the national park we can fish anywhere we want? In most any case, in Yellowstone, you can go in there and fish, but we can't hunt. I said, you know, you think about that. They don't look at all animals the same, even though she does. I mean, to her, she loves all the animals, and I like a lot of different kinds of animals. But it brought up a good point that a lot of animals are more important to them than others, mm-hmm. where I think most hunters really try to look at the overall ecosystem. I mean, you know.
And we put our money where our mouth is.
By far. Way more than
anybody.
Yeah. We're not out there writing and holding signs. Instead, we're out there putting in thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of thousands of dollars a year to make it better so that our kids and our grandkids can go out there and experience those things and hunt and see them. I mean, I don't think we need to hunt in every corner of the globe by any means, and I'm okay with national parks where you can't hunt, but I just think it brings up a good point that
there's hypocrisy going on.
It's total. I mean, you're not going to tell me that what we do to a fish when we pull it out of the water is not way worse than what you do to 90% of the animals we hunt and shoot. As far as the way you're treating the animal.
Especially if it's catch and release.
Yeah, those catch release fuckers ain't any better.
Like you said, that I don't know what it is about that you don't think a fish feels pain or something. And I'm not saying I think there's anything wrong with it, but just see it for what it is. Mm-hmm. See, you know.
No, but I know lots of anglers or fly fishermen, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them. They're pro fishing, pro catch and release, where a lot of those fish die.
Yeah.
But they totally chastise hunters.
Right.
Which doesn't even make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. No. We don't just shoot it once and be like, ah, you're probably okay.
Walk it off, buddy. Walk it off.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I just think that we need to all, logic should dictate, and logic does not dictate anymore. No,
and science, right?
Mm-hmm. Logic, science, yeah.
Washington, we just a few years back let the people of Washington vote on whether or not we should make different hunting changes with hounds and with baiting for bears and things like that. And to me, I have my view because I'm a hunter, obviously. But I think going and doing that and not letting the biologists who are, you know, they have the experience, they have the training, and they are the ones that should be helping make the decisions, not just public opinion.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely. Look at the BC Grizzly Trophy thing.
Right.
That is not logical at all.
No.
Or look at the wolf study, all that stuff getting destroyed because it was in a wilderness area. So somehow getting that information in a wilderness area makes that all that information not good because it was in a what the fuck does that even mean?
It didn't meet their agenda. That's what it means.
how can you say that? How can you throw all that? We put money into that.
Right.
Whether it's a wilderness area or not, and it sounds like the fishing game did mess up and they went in there and they weren't supposed to, they didn't have permits or whatever.
Right.
But why would you throw away that data just for the hell of it?
Yeah.
Logic, man. It's all about logic. We don't have much of it. Common sense.
They don't travel. Right. They don't travel to a different unit, or just like when we get told, oh, wolves don't live there, or this doesn't live here. And I'm like, that always cracks me.
1994, saw a black wolf up the Coeur d'Alene River, told the fishing game, they're like, there's no way.
Right.
1994, but it was there.
Yeah.
Well, and it was weird because it had legs, so therefore it could walk, but yet, you know, go figure.
Well, we've hammered all this to death, and Justin's got to drive back across the state of Washington.
Yep.
So, Justin, where do you want to be found?
Where do I want to be found? Find me on Rockslide. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and all that too, but get on Rockslide, and you can ask us any questions you want.
Go follow Justin on Instagram because he posts great pictures.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, they're really awesome.
And his kid, Dylan, he's a good-looking kid, and he's going to be a little killer of his own.
Yeah.
Here he is.
Yeah.
He's doing awesome. So.
Yeah. And don't take that wrong, you liberals. I mean that in a good law-abiding way. Killer.
Right. Yeah. We kill legally, so don't freak out. Yeah.
So, all right, Justin, we really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.